And we are live. This is Dark Journalist. Oh, what a fantastic crowd we have out there in the ideas room already tonight. Of course, tonight I am joined by the lovely Olivia.
Hi, everybody.
And Olivia, what we have here is failure to communicate. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what was going on with the Congress and the Secret Service leader, Kimberly Cheadle, today. It's a lot of strange things, of course, in relation to the assassination attempt and the actions of the Secret Service on the Trump incident. And I'll tell you, there's a long history with unusual activity around the Secret Service that goes into some of the major deep events in our history. Of course, the Kennedy assassination falls right into that. And what we're seeing is that this is an agency that is controlled by different forces. And so it's very hard sometimes to put your finger on one particular person inside of that structure. But what I think is fascinating and how it plays into tonight's special report on the COG presidential election revealed is that the continuity of government is Kimberly Cheadle is no stranger to the continuity of government program, because she, in fact, was on Dick Cheney's detail and evacuated then Vice President Cheney to the COG bunker during 9/11. So this is somebody who plays right into that continuity of government background. And they probably selected her for that very reason. Interestingly enough, in the middle of questions today, she stumbled out with the term continuity of government, not in context. And I actually have a recording of that mm-hmm. that I'm going to play under questioning. And it is quite fascinating because there have been a lot of sort of strange ad-libs today. One of them, of course, from Kamala Harris, who is now ascending to be the presidential candidate for the Democrats, with the kind of striking amount of incidents that have taken place in the last 72 hours since we delivered our show on Friday night. This is quite remarkable, I would say, in terms of the pace of things and also how they're being handled. Of course, a number of kind of astute news eyes have noticed that ordinarily what you have on the Sunday shows, you know, after something like Biden stepping down, which he did drop out under extreme pressure inside his own party, seeing his deteriorating mental health after the disastrous debate with President Trump on June 27th. Now, I had pointed out that this debate is interesting because of the timing, and presidential debates don't happen before September and October, which is when they're always held, unless they're primary debates. And so this is was an unusual thing, which meant someone was planning back there for this exact scenario. And I believe the same planners around throwing Biden out are the same planners who were behind President Trump's assassination attempt. One of the stories that's been leaking out from substantial sources around this is top Dems threatened to forcibly remove Biden from office unless he dropped out, set him up to fail at Trump debate. This is actually correct on a number of different levels. What's interesting to me is debates, you know, I follow timelines about how campaigns go very closely. And the minute that they put June up as a debate period, I knew that something very odd was going on. And so they wanted this in there. Of course, ordinarily, as I mentioned, they don't usually do those debates before they have the coronation at the conventions and all the rest. And another interesting timeline piece is that the Trump assassination attempt had to go down before he had a vice presidential candidate in place. These things, I think, have to be noted, and that Trump didn't have his VP picked, one, and that they forced Biden into this early pose for this debate, which he was not, you know, where the country basically at large could see what we've been saying here for a few years, which is, you know, Stepford Biden wasn't with it enough to really make the types of decisions. And also that he was being controlled and there was a team controlling him. And that gets us into very unusual territory, like discussions around the nuclear football, foreign policy, a number of different things. Now, it didn't help matters that when Biden disappeared from the cameras and supposedly had COVID. There were weird stories going around about this. And we haven't seen Biden in a number of days. Now, what they released for him coming out, of course, of the presidential race and stepping down and throwing it to Kamala, and he has endorsed her for the presidency, by the way. Obama has not as of yet, which I think is very interesting. He wants an open process at the convention, i.e. a revolt against the nominee. But I think it's interesting because that letter came out and it didn't look like what you would do if you were stepping down as president. There were no photos attached. There were no videos attached. There was no statement. It was just anybody could have written it. And then it looked like a stamped on signature. Some people said it didn't even look like a signature. I won't even get into that. Maybe it was the classic Biden signature. It doesn't matter. They easily can put that together. The question is Biden as president consciously taking those actions? And I think it's a very important question. And this is where the COG element comes in and how we get closer to that continuity of government clock striking midnight. Under these circumstances and what that could mean for the country with the election 2024, which the deep state realizes is not going to go their way. So this is a really big problem. We're going to get into that and all the comments around it and the strangeness of Biden showing up at this Kamala campaign event via phone and just making these weird remarks. And now we have this disembodied voice floating out there. We have a Twitter resignation of the presidency. I mean, you know, this is very unusual stuff. And the next thing may be an animation of Joe Biden saying what a good time he's had. But we're definitely in uncharted territory, and that has to be notable and also a signal that COG may be being put in place. And I want to describe again on Friday and on a number of shows, I've outlined what continuity of government program is. But I want to describe it not as, you know, some fear factor for us to go over the cliff with, but as a process of government that is completely unconstitutional. And therefore, the more people are made aware of it, the better off we are in terms of being able to stop something like this from happening, which is basically martial law. And also how developed that plan is. And we know that these people can turn in a dime and just come up with all these regulations that are highly unconstitutional and make these government officials go along with it. We saw it during the COVID op. We saw it during 9/11. We saw it during the financial bust of 2009. I mean, it's just something that, you know, they have the ability. But most recently, I think, with the COVID op and the amount of restrictions that were going on, we get a glimpse of some of that. And in my opinion, that's still soft op versus hard op. And so we're definitely getting a lot of the hard op now. We're going to be taking some of your questions. This is still a shortened report, though. We're going to go just because it's Monday night here, and we wanted to do a special report to catch up on especially things happening on the presidential level and the presence of COG in the mix of all this. So we'll go with you for about an hour and 15 minutes here. We'll take some of your questions at the end as well. And Miss Olivia, how's it going out there?
It's going. It's crazy already.
Notables?
Izzy the Great said, so did the Secret Service director let the cat out of the bag on COG today? And the Journey Home says, Cheadle mentioning COG totally made me sit up.
Look, we're getting close. This is what happens too when things go quantum in a sense. Like, there's a quickening that takes place on all sides. And it's almost like nobody can slow down this process. I'm going to play, actually, her audio of saying that and how it's sort of out of context and doesn't make sense. And yet, as you know, this whole program is built around steganography. This is the X steganography series. I feel like that's large-scale steganography that she's putting out there saying, don't ask me any more questions. This gets into continuity of government. You know, the one agency I've said has been missing from the discussion in all this are the masters of assassination, the Central Intelligence Agency themselves, of course, highly complicit in the assassination of a U.S. president 60 years ago, where they're still hiding the files, and numerous illegal activities at home and abroad. They've been curiously missing. And yet from the whole discussion around the assassination attempt on July 13th against President Trump, especially with this thing that they've floated about, oh, there was an Iranian team that was looking to take Trump out. as this kind of cover story for what was going on, and this deflection in case the crook story isn't holding. Of course, you'd have CIA people involved, and they'd be part of this process as well. So there's a shadow hand in there, and we'll get into that. I wanted to show you this. This is the monument at CIA headquarters, speaking of steganography and codes. And it's an unbreakable code, and they invite every agent to try to break what this is. And, you know, I won't get into the details of this here, but I want you to know just how much these people operate in a twilight of code and messaging, et cetera. And of course, it'd be enough to drive the average person bonkers. Mm-hmm. But I think with steganography, we have a key of when some of these things take place, having some sort of symbolic radar for understanding where the messaging is going and how that helps inform us about what's actually taking place. You don't want a process like that to get too imaginative and everything is symbolic, you know, I mean, then you're living in a real twilight. But the thing is, there is a lot of symbolism in her mentioning COG today. So I'm going to put that up here. Let's listen to the Secret Service director strangely dropping continuity of government into the middle of her questioning. Okay, and let's see if we can get some volume.
My question is, if he'd been a sitting president, would he have had the same security he had on July 13th, or would have been beefed up?
There is a difference between the sitting president.
So your answer is he didn't.
And continuity of government and the responsibility.
So he did not. Okay, there wasn't a...
I mean, it's extraordinary. And what she says there, there's a difference between a sitting president and continuity of government. It doesn't actually add up to what he's asking. But it is very interesting because she, as we know, was very close to continuity of government because she had actually experienced having to whisk away the vice president into continuity of government protection in 2001 during the September 11th attacks and Dick Cheney. And of course, Dick Cheney would come out in October after all this, after coming out of the deep COG mountain, like Moses with the Ten Commandments, and he had the Patriot Act. Now, when you look at circumstances like that, I think you get a glimpse of this deeper thing that seems to be sharing, and it's, of course, Professor Peter Dale Scott has referred to this as the deep state, regardless of how that term has been bandied about or thinned down by overuse or whatever it happens to be. It's still the most descriptive, especially when we stick to his, Professor Peter Dale Scott's exact meaning of the term, which I'm going to get into tonight, because I think our understanding of the deep state and the continuity of government program is more important now than ever. I want to remind you, before we even dig into this too heavily, especially if you're new here, to go to the darkjournalist.com website and sign up for our newsletter. That is a free newsletter. It lets you know exactly what's going on, the programs coming up, incredible interviews. We have a very special interview for you Friday. X-series shows, documentaries. Of course, the Apotheum JFK documentary that we just put out, Hacking Atlantis. I mean, these things are extraordinary, and they're all there in your newsletter for you, along with all the incredible reports and special event things that we have coming up for you in the summer and the fall. And so make sure that you stand up and be counted. And it's the best way to get around the intense censorship. The censorship is so laughable, and people send me so many examples. And it's particularly amped up in the last couple of months around our program here. And, you know, searches for dark journalists take you into Nowhere Land and CNN and all that kind of stuff. That's just the way they've designed it. They've kept us off the grid. And we did that funny test on Friday where the hashtag dark journalist says nothing to see here. You know, there's only 600 videos or whatever it happens to be. So, but anyway, if we have that direct pipeline, we can get around all of it. So that's the solution there. And like I said, we'll send it to you once a week. And boy, are you going to be pleased by what you're going to see coming up there for this summer. Great guests and more. So make sure you stand up and be counted. I also want to mention, we will take some questions at the very end of the program. Miss Olivia, you're up.
Najat Madri says, boy, things must really be bad if there's a Monday broadcast.
Yeah, and watch. I can't remember the last time we did Monday.
I don't know if we ever have.
This is too important. See, the thing is, when you get into, you can see the footprints of things unraveling. Yeah, this is the problem. So you had Benjamin Netanyahu you know, who under any circumstances is the leader of Israel, and there was no one there to greet him today. No Kamala, no Biden, no Anthony Blinken even, you know, send the lowest stringer, the Secretary of State who messed everything up in Ukraine, send him out to meet Netanyahu. Nobody. That shows incredible disarray behind the scenes, the lack of Biden's presence, the demand for proof of life. And, you know, proof of life isn't some weird audio recording coming into a campaign headquarters that are controlled by the Democrats. That could be organized by AI quite easily. I could sample my voice in AI right now and someone could create a message of me saying, Kamala, I'm behind you all the way, you know. right, now they got the sample. But the thing is, so that doesn't prove anything. So these demands for proof of life and the fact that they can't produce anything, not even a photo, that they, you know, I mean, think about it. Even if he was in this incredible health distress or something, there should be a way to do a photo. But they're saying the doctor let out a statement. His doctor let out a statement saying, oh, no, he's fine. He's going to be hitting the campaign trail next week. So there's some kind of large scale disconnect. And there aren't people out there until the Secret Service hearing today. Was there any real conversation going on? The weekend was a complete wash and there were just kind of mild speculations. But people in the news were wondering, you could tell. It's so interesting to watch how the media has responded over these past few weeks since the disastrous debate by President Biden against President Trump, because a lot of them turned, you know, there was a revolt against their own candidate, and there was some resistance by the Bidens against their own deep state handlers there. You could see it. And so you had people like Rachel Maddow, who's the ultimate sort of attack poodle for that regime, and on one day, she was saying, well, it looks like he needs to go. And then the next day, she was saying, he's ready to take on the campaign. The erratic behavior of these people who were paid, you know, millions of dollars to keep up the ridiculous lies of the administration, their behavior tells you that there's something completely wrong. Even Scarborough and those, you know, bizarro circus freak show at MSNBC, they didn't know how to handle this. So it lets you know that the element that had complete control had split in some regard, and that perhaps the Biden forces and the Obama forces were split into two different aspects of the deep state that weren't agreeing on something. And that back and forth was, you know, somebody thought that they could keep the facade up of Biden for the entire presidency and then just drag him across election day and then install Kamala. Well, that plan went down hard because the other faction scheduled him for that early debate. And so now we see the unraveling taking place from that. But both factions in the middle of their battle had enough confusion laid on the media that the whole thing threatened to unravel. And in the middle of it, you had the unsuccessful attempt against Trump that was meant to unify both of these branches of the deep state. I'm absolutely convinced that there's a shooting team involved in the assassination attempt on President Trump. And it doesn't follow that it's any particular party. Remember that. You can't say that the Democrats were after this. You know, I'm sure a lot of them would have been relieved inside of those government structures. But no, remember that there are, the deep state doesn't know Republican or Democrat. It's a completely partyless apparatus, and it'll use anything, you know, that it can get its hands on. And so we have to keep that in mind as we do this as well, because there's going to be just a lot of partisan nonsense about it. That doesn't add up. What you want to know is the deep state and their footprints moves through either party. And I think it is significant that there's tremendous, and I mean tremendous, opposition to President Trump in the Republican Party, and that they put him over the top, yes, but there was the whole Haley faction and the Cheney faction. And it's interesting because the Cheney faction represents the COG faction, because Cheney, Dick Cheney, former VP and ultimate sort of deep state scoundrel, he, and the fact that his daughter was out there doing all these things to make sure that Trump went to prison, J6 committees, you know, whatever it happened to be. And the fact that she has no standing at all because she's, you know, she was a low-level congresswoman who got thrown out with her opponent getting over 60% of the vote. I mean, that speaks volumes. So there's no reason why these people should take her as any kind of authority in all this. That faction of COG certainly was aligned against Trump. And he knew it also during his presidency. And at the end of his presidency, I think he tried to unravel a lot of these rules around the continuity of government. Very strange things took place in the last 2 months of the Trump administration. So we have to think of COG as being active in the middle of all this. Even if right now they're saying, okay, the factions are getting behind Kamala or whatever, this COG process is ready. It's at the ready. If they can't succeed, these Harris promoters inside the deep state, then COG is ready. There's no question. And I think we've gotten a lot closer to that. And I think the symbol, the real hallmark of the whole thing is that Joe has been missing for 5 days and they just don't have an explanation, you know. And they have, as I mentioned at the top of the program, just weird notices on Twitter and him calling in and things that aren't verifiable. So there's no actual proof of life. Now they have ramped up and they know how to ramp up social media now so that they ramped up this whole thing. Like, is Joe dead? Is Joe dead? So that when he comes out, he can be like, oh, those crazy conspiracy theorists, I'm alive. So you have to, you know, it's a very...
Don't walk into
it. Yeah, it's a tightrope in terms of how you deal with it. And so it's very important to keep a cool head and collect the facts at this point. But let's factor in the COG element and let's get the real thing on the continuity of government program, which we've tried to lay out here on this program based on the person who really brought it to the fore. And that's Professor Scott's work. Weird spin-off stuff that I've heard about is very diluted over the years. You know, I was doing interviews with Professor Scott 10 years ago on this stuff, and I've been reading his stuff since college. So I have a good understanding of where he was coming from, and he did 5 decades of this research on the deep state, coined the term the deep state before anybody was using it. As a matter of fact, continuity of government wasn't even in the lexicon. It was, nobody even knew about it, and you weren't allowed to talk about it in Congress or anywhere else. It plays into this election, and I can use these historic examples in order to get us around this, that COG, in fact, the continuity of government players, have been involved in every major deep event in American history, and there's no reason for them to stop now when they feel they're close to a great triumph. But it is interesting. And one of the great things I think about Professor Scott's work, and again, it's very, you know, you can't go right or left on this stuff. I mean, Scott here is a complete, you know, lefty, classic liberal Berkeley professor, you know, so it, this isn't like you're getting some kind of right-wing analysis on it. That's a left-wing. So you see how the right and the left things become kind of dynamics that when you get into the basic facts don't actually represent much. But I would say this about Scott's work, which is very ahead of its time. I always knew that. But two, it grabbed the essence of the mystery about why this was the untouchable factor in American government politics and why this whole kind of parapolitical system of the deep state could come in, cause a dramatic change in the structure, and then, you know, so that that covert force would come into the overt state, change things, and then step back, and we're left with all this rubble and the chaos in the aftermath, and nobody knows, except there are some footprints back there. And very often, you know, you could always point to some figure like a Henry Kissinger or somebody. You knew that they were an interface with the deep state, but the actual players, you'd never know their names. So we can see the Cheneys, we can see the Kissingers, you know, we can see this kind of layer on top, Soros and all the rest. But the real deep players, you know, at that we're not going to get their names or their addresses. That I can tell you. Okay, a couple of quick things I want to mention about crooks that continuing in this strange fashion. I'm going to take us back to July 13th and the assassination attempt on Trump and the way that under questioning today, Cheadle didn't have good answers about anything and deflected constantly to the FBI, which is a well-known diversionary tactic. Why she was even there, I don't know, because she didn't answer anything of substance, for sure. And when she was nailed very hard, there was a lot of anger, and you could tell that the constituents had been pushing the Congress people, because the Congress people came in really caffeinated and ready to take her on. I mean, this was not a light session. And so, you know, they want to know too, because they're caught in the middle on all this, on right and left. And what I would say is interesting is when they pressed her, they said, well, was it one gunman or two or three or a team, or was it a conspiracy? What was it? And she said it was a lone gunman. Well, we've heard that before. One, two, there's no way this guy on his own could get all this stuff off. Okay, here's a few things on the record. And the government still hasn't come forward and given an actual press conference on this, which is also unusual. We have the unusual Biden Disappearing Act. We have the unusual lack of transparency around this incident. Even you would think the government would present a press conference where they pretend to answer the questions. So this is very strange. There's no FBI press conference. And supposedly they're like, it's going to take 60 days to get a report together. No,
that's not going to.
Yeah. Think about that. I mean, in what, you know, on what planet would 60 days be necessary? So let's think about this though. So we have this shooter on this rooftop, and he's only about 130, 140 yards from the president. Under any normal Secret Service protocol, he would have been handled. They never would have let the president, the former president, enter into that situation. And as I mentioned on Friday, one of the most astounding pieces of information, which has been verified over and over again, is that two policemen who heard that he was on the right on the roof there, stood on each other's shoulders to get up there. And the cop gets up there and he sees Crooks, who turns around, or someone who looks like the description of Crooks. Again, there's some, in terms of identifying Crooks, we don't even know if that was him that people were seeing with the gun, because he actually shows up quite differently depending on what picture you're looking at. And, you know, it does give you Oswald, Billy Lovelady vibes when you take a look at it. But what you can see right off the bat from this is that the policeman's recollection goes something like this. I got up there and I saw this person who looked like Crooks with a rifle in that building, and he turned the rifle on me. So, you know, he jumps down. So there, this policeman has just had an actual engagement with an assassin, and the assassin points the weapon at him. And then he gets on the radio and says, there's a guy on the roof. And he just pointed the gun at me. Now, that would have set off all the bells and whistles. The event would have been shut down. They would have grabbed the guy, whatever it happened to be. That's the way that it would have gone under normal circumstances. I mean, you know, someone pointing a weapon at a policeman is a big deal anyway, even if it wasn't a rally. So the fact that this wasn't handled, and, you know, we have a number of people identifying Crooks, also the character that we've seen as Crooks anyway, he seems to be wandering around attracting attention to himself, even jumping between buildings and stuff like that. And you remember that during the JFK assassination, when you look at the record on that, and it was staged very much the same way to point to someone, in this case, Oswald, you had early reports of people looking up at the school book depository before Kennedy's motorcade got there and saying, oh, I saw someone up there with a rifle, you know, so they wanted this image up there. And somehow the motorcade, someone in the planning knew that this wasn't going to be stopped just because this reporting might come out, but they wanted witnesses to have this, like, oh, I saw a shiny rifle up there. And so they did the same thing with Crooks. Instantly, the person who they claimed was shooting off that roof was killed. So there's no way to talk to them about anything. We have a lot of information that's come out and people have talked about it. I'm still looking at it relating to a shooter in the water tower, which was a great angle for this. And you do have in an unedited portion of an interview in the excerpts that were thrown out, basically, that have circulated from Fox News, this woman talking and saying, yeah, they shot at somebody at the water tower. And then also talking about how another assassin escaped into the woods. So there's a lot of activity there. It sounds like a shooting team and someone deployed as a distraction. And of course, the activities of the Secret Service with it, I mean, are just extraordinary. One of the weirdest things is the fact that There's a van tied to Crooks, which apparently he had a receiver ready, a transmitter ready to detonate explosives in this van, but the van had Arizona plates. This is also an unusual piece, and Crooks had parked it there earlier in front of a house just outside of where all this happened. And the person who knew that, you know, who owned the house, who knew that what there wasn't parking allowed there, thought it was a little weird that there was this van there, but, you know, it was just like, okay, whatever, you know. And eventually they figured out that it was tied to Crooks. A couple of weird things about Crooks. One, this van is tied to him at the scene. The next thing is there's a Hyundai that he, you know, they know that it's his car. They grabbed it. So that was there at the scene. Now there's a news story that Trump gunman Thomas Crooks used bike to scout the rally out unimpeded. Would-be Trump assassin Thomas Matthew Crooks rode his bicycle around the former president's rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. This is a New York Post story, also reported in the Washington Post and New York Times. He ditched it in full view of cops in a crowd before he climbed on top of a roof and opened fire. Law enforcement and witnesses confirmed to the New York Post. Exclusive photos showed the gunman's bike parked beneath a tree just yards from the building where he fired up eight shots, grazing Trump's ear and killing a hero firefighter and wounding two other supporters. I'd say that's more than grazing Trump's ear. He almost blew his head off. It was like, you know, a half inch to the right and it would have been all over. Thomas Matthew Crooks rode a bike through the Trump rally, law enforcement sources said. Okay, so this guy has a van. He's got a Hyundai car and he's got a bike. I mean, this is a lot of activity with this one guy taking all this stuff around. And then he's also carrying a backpack, a phone, and a rifle. So, you know, there's something wrong with the idea of him doing this exclusively on his own. And I think this is the biggest omission by the Secret Service director today. And also, you know, there's no way around this aspect from any serious research. ABC News reported that he was spotted on the roof by Secret Service counter-sniper teams 20 minutes before he opened fire, which meant the president should never have been on the roof, as I've reiterated ever since the event happened. There's no way that they should have let Trump come out and give a speech while they had a shooter in their sights on top of this roof who was a potential sniper. It's absurd. So this is what generated the big hearings today, and then all the stonewalling mixed with Biden stepping down. There's something very strange, and I've described it that this is the deep state in action, but there's this force moving through all these things, trying to maneuver it all into place after the botched assassination. So now we're looking at a different plan kick in because plan A certainly failed. A lot of people have suggested, well, maybe it was a warning to Trump or whatever. I think given the seriousness of the shooting and how close it was, I'm going to totally disagree. I'm going to say the entire event was meant to assassinate President Trump. We're supposed to be living in the world that they had created there. And we're just lucky by a hair's breadth that we missed that chaotic scene. The question is, what is the nature of the deep state operating there? And what is the role of the continuity of government COG players in the middle of it? That's what we're going to get to for the rest of the program tonight. Everyone, you're watching this Dark Journalist Show. This is a special report in the X series, COG presidential election revealed. We're going to get into some of the history of COG here, and then we'll take your questions. We're going to wrap it up maybe around 9:30 or so.
Sounds good.
And Miss Olivia is taking your questions. How are we doing out there?
Doing great. Anna Wilson says, how many casings were on the roof? That
yes,
Cheadle would not answer that today. Victoria Stone says, yes, I watched much of the SS hearing. She's a complete stonewall, no info. Luke Brooklyn says she hasn't even visited the site yet, which is even more absurd.
Well, I'll tell you who did visit the site was Josh Hawley, the senator from Missouri. And the FBI were freaked out and said, we don't want you here. And that's weird, too, because then you have the faction of elected officials versus our law enforcement federal agencies. That's a weird clash. That means that something is occurring inside that structure where they're getting orders that aren't based on the elected officials that represent us. That's a big problem, which is why I think that the continuity of government clock, again, is moving closer, because, you know, and I say that in a way that I think that they're around in throughout history. So, you know, in some ways it's nothing new. But I think the unacceptability for them of a Trump victory in November is causing factions inside of that secret structure to rise up and really try to take control of the situation. And people are getting freaked out because they don't know where this is coming from. It has to be, people have to look at the continuity of government people, and they have to look at that force of deep state pressure and where it could come from. It does not originate in any party. So it's not going to be able to scapegoat a party or an individual. You have to try to see the wave of the force with this. And so we do have certain types of connections, I would say, there with the Secret Service director and the Cheney 9/11 event. And her mention of continuity of government today, that doesn't mean the Secret Service director is behind the whole thing. It just means that in that chain of command, there's something, there's some piece with this. There's some player that's not active on the reporting stage. And it's going to benefit us greatly to go through the detail of these deep events to discover that. Now, and I want to mention that we've been through incidents like this before, but now, there are some things where we're in kind of uncharted territory, and that plays very dangerously. And I would say that that raises the possibility of this type of continuity of government play for martial law. And if anything, you know, the more we do to expose it, definitely lowers the possibility. There's no question about it. But let's just understand who they are and what they do. And, you know, also see that they've brought things to the brink before during 9/11 as well. We had a lot of very, very unusual things related to our, you know, the nuclear plane, the doomsday plane. It's fascinating. One of the great things that Professor Scott did was bring a lot of attention to this E-4B doomsday plane. He actually put it on the cover of his book, and the American Deep State, which I think is a classic. And this image of this E-4B over the White House is based on actual witness testimony of people seeing the E-4B after the Twin Towers were attacked, but before the Pentagon was hit. There was this plane hovering over the White House going in circles around it. And the thing was, you know, when people investigated this, originally you have all these news reports of all these people seeing it, and even CNN's John King saw it. That's what I found interesting in the historical record. But this thing is basically, just like they say Air Force One is like a floating fortress of the White House, the E-4B is like the Pentagon floating. So it has the ability to launch our nukes. It has the ability to do things. And we keep these things in the air at all times whenever there's a heightened situation. But over the White House, sitting there, never has happened before. So this was unusual. But again, in the historical record, it doesn't exist. And the Pentagon's official version of this is, we have no knowledge of a plane above the White House before that second set of planes hit the Pentagon. Now, after the Twin Towers hit, that plane, that supposedly the plane that hit the Pentagon. So there have been moves by this agency that we can't see before, and the official explanations never come out about it. There are moves in relation to the Kennedy assassination, when you go back there. Over and over again, we find the continuity of government players or people related to it right in the heart of these deep events that change policy in America. In the heart of it, you know, whether you identify it through the JFK assassination, Watergate, Iran-Contra, certainly 9/11, the coup, and all the martial law talk during the crash of 2009, and certainly COVID with all the COG talk suddenly becoming commonplace, I've pointed out that the mention of COG was so scant, you could not get people to talk about it openly. And by the 2020 election, you had Nancy Pelosi constantly talking about how she was doing COG briefings and all this. It was an unusual shift. And the idea was to bring in the possibility that people could get used to this idea that maybe for a little while, these guys would control things. Let's talk about that control structure briefly and cite a few things from Professor Scott's work. Now, I want to mention this because we're always looking for things that might be moves in the background. And there was a significant move. First, they switched out the COG commander in February. And now the new one that we have is Gregory Guillo. Now, General Guillo, it's interesting when he assumed the role of NORTHCOM commander, he became also the leader of NORAD and became the COG combatant commander, just like his predecessor, Van Herk, General Van Herk. I've pointed out that all three of the last COG commanders had some kind of weird connection in with the UFO file as well, including the fact that Van Herk was part of the 509th, which in legacy terms connected him back to the Roswell story. So we have a weird UFO signature around the COG commanders. And, you know, it's there. It's a trail that's there in the record. It's undeniable that they're associated with Air Force bases that have had major incidents, just like the Montana nuclear incident where a UFO shut off all these nukes. They had, of course, the leader of Space Force. This guy was, you know, at that base for 10 years. So it's interesting to me that in these very high positions, you have these people directly related over to the UFO file. But how's this for NORAD and COG? NORAD and U.S. NORTHCOM Command Senior Enlisted Leader, change of responsibility, June 14th, 2024. They changed their command senior enlisted leaders. And Guillo, you know, this is him installing his people, which every one of them do that, don't get me wrong. But I think the timing is quite remarkable. June, and then you get all this activity. So, you know, and that's open and available information right on their website, et cetera. What it suggests to me, timing-wise, is that if the timing was a coincidence, it's quite extraordinary that they happen to roll into one, an assassination attempt, two, a president that appears to go out of action and possibly be dead, or he may still be alive, and his vice president ascending to the presidency, you know, under unusual circumstances while a war is going on, you know, with NATO. So you have a lot of strange things going on there. In addition to the fact that over the past month, of course, we have these reports of Russian ships going by Miami that are nuclear armed and then having port at Cuba. The last time we had incidents like that, of course, President Kennedy had to face down our own generals from getting into a nuclear war over Cuba. So it seems to me too much activity in a short period of time for it to be coincidental by a long shot. Whatever is going on in the background is based on, you know, and I mentioned that the Trump assassination attempt should be called PB overthrow because the CIA was using PB for everything when they were going into these Central American countries. Well, this PB overthrow piece that was going on was basically the attempt there to set the deep state back up because they're facing now a number of things, failed attempts to get Trump illegally. And those were major, even though largely they're now dismissed and even the Supreme Court smacked them down on a number of these frivolous cases. A president has never been charged before. Remember in 2022, in the summer of 22, only 2 years ago, they raided Mar-a-Lago. They've never raided a president's residence before. You know, this hasn't happened. It didn't happen to Nixon, who was in a lot of trouble at the time. So for them to have done that put us already into this kind of banana republic feel. And this has been the progressive move. And they what they did with Biden, you know, they didn't have a firebrand in there. They didn't have someone who was really with it so they could move a number of things through him as the figurehead of this, you know, old Democrat figure who was somehow associated with Obama. And they certainly knew, and this is what's coming out now, and it will really hang a lot. You know, it'll really be an obstruction for Kamala Harris, I believe, which is that so many people in that administration knew that he was mentally deficient. So for them to have, you know, put it off and played it off against even the media, who also had played along for a long time until recently. So, you know, we get into a situation where there are these factions and somebody's got to take the blame, just like when they put Cheadle out there today. There's no question that she is taking the blame for it. But the question is, who really was behind moving that chain of command around so these things didn't happen? Getting to the bottom of those answers is going to be crucial. That's what we're going to do next. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. This is a special report for you on Monday here, July 22nd, the COG presidential election. We have a very interesting show coming up for you on Friday. And so this is just, you know, keeping up with things as they're breaking. We're going to go for about another 20 minutes or so here. And it's great to have so many of you there out there in the ideas room. I want to remind you, especially if you're new here, to go to the darkjournalist.com website and sign up for our free newsletter. That newsletter keeps us in touch through all the amazing and oppressive censorship that we've seen. And given the things that we report on, I guess you could say we're an easy target. But it is quite remarkable because I've had people who have done independent reviews of this, and they come back to me with astonishing results saying, I've never seen anything. I don't understand how this censorship is working. With you guys, there's like a real block in place. So the best way to get around that is to be on that newsletter list. It'll let you know about amazing X series episodes we have coming up for you, along with documentaries. Of course, we have the Apotheum documentary on the JFK UFO file. That's out there now and very exciting, along with some events that we have coming up for you this fall. You don't want to miss it. It's all in that newsletter and it's free. So make sure you signed up for it at darkjournalist.com and you'll be the first to hear about everything that we have going on for you. And there'll be no question about whether YouTube or, you know, any of these platforms give you notification about the shows coming up. I mean, it's kind of extraordinary, I have to say, because I've watched it closely and, you know, I know a great deal about technology, and even edited a tech magazine for a number of years and know some of the best people around technology. This, the type of algorithm shadow banning that goes on with the shows that we do is remarkable. And I think it says a lot about the content. They don't want people having these types of conversations. That much is for certain. And especially when we spill into areas that they try to manipulate that aren't really on the radar of either the corporate media or the alternative media. And so at the deeper levels, I think when it comes to COG, this kind of X-tech, exotic technology piece, and along with a lot of the other things that we cover on the show, I think that they maintain a real hardcore policy against keeping those types of things out and letting the frivolous stuff really be the order of the day. So what I try to do with this program, and I'm happy, very happy, I'm able to associate with great people around this, which is keep the shows that we do very potent and the information very potent for you and less into the kind of frivolous clickbait stuff. And you'll find that the guests and people that we have on the program who are close to the X series, they do the same thing. I mean, some of the most potent research from people who are close colleagues of the X series. So that's what we want to really be doing with all this. And so the censorship becomes less and less important. Okay, let's get a couple of things on the record here. One, I've suggested on a number of occasions about Trump. One, Trump's relationship with high-level figures before he got into the presidency, like Richard Nixon. Nixon and Trump having a very close relationship, basically Nixon giving him the layout of the deep state presidentially, and also Trump providing him an office in New York so they could get together and have lunch, and all this kind of stuff. Trump and Roy Cohn, architect of the deep state, one of the kind of swampiest of the bunch, and him being kind of a political mentor to Trump, letting him know in that deep state minefield where to go and where not to go and where to kind of pull the plug. And then Trump's own uncle, Uncle John, and his deep connection to an advanced level of technology. The fact that he was called in by Vannevar Bush for the U.S. government to go in and review Tesla's work after Tesla had died. And the fact that Vannevar Bush was so advanced on the UFO file, and that John Trump, Professor John Trump, was the protege of Vannevar Bush. Those things all play into the history that we're watching unfold. And I put this on the record. You know, a lot of political people don't include the UFO file with the work. No. The UFO file is right in the heart of these things. Make no mistake about it. And when you get into President Kennedy's assassination, you're going to find the same exact thing. Of course, famously, I had one of the Watergate lawyers come on this program and tell me that his friend, E. Howard Hunt, told him Kennedy was assassinated over the UFO file. You have to understand the players and the aerospace aspect connected with all this as well if you want to get to the heart of it. So I would say the overlooked factors in this type of research really have to do with UFOs and exotic technology in aerospace. And the continuity of government aspect, remember, when you talk about things like a secret space program and things we've reported on in this program, all you have to do really to get that going is take that underground apparatus, the secrecy that they were able to develop in the height of the Cold War nuclear scare, to build massive underground bunkers and basically a central government underground. You could transfer those rules to space, and that's where you would get things like space programs that nobody would know about, or off-world officers lists, as were reported by the NASA hacker, Gary McKinnon. Those things are on the record. You know, the fact that Obama went over there to the UK during this whole thing when the US wanted to extradite Gary McKinnon. McKinnon, in that sense, is almost like, you know, he's like a reflection in a UFO mirror of a Julian Assange character, because although Assange, you know, was all about this political exposure and bringing things to the fore and finally got released from prison from this kangaroo court charges against him, McKinnon's a very unusual story because the U.S. wanted him and they wanted him bad. And when it was brought up at a UK press conference with Prime Minister Cameron and Obama, Obama said, "We're working very closely with the authorities here in the UK to make sure that extradition of McKinnon goes through," because they didn't want, you know, this guy poking around in the UFO files at NASA via his hacking abilities, which he, you know, he's always played them down and said, "Well, I just stumbled into this or stumbled into that," whatever it was. He got some very unusual information and input back. And one of those pieces was this off-world officers list. So what did that suggest? You know, we understand about astronauts, but off-world officers? And that list and its various designations as well represented what seemed like a huge program right in the middle of all this. Who had ever heard anything about it? So you see how these things have substance, and how, you know, the kind of circusy version, the Gaia TV type stuff, has really taken what would be legitimate political research and siphoned off, you know, a number of ideas. And there's a lot of plagiarism in that too. There's plagiarism of, you know, the work that we do, Gigi Young's work, Dr. Farrell's work, whatever it would happen to be. They're able to vacuum it up, you know, and regurgitate it in this totally superficial fashion. And I'm sure that the marketing people are very happy when they do that, but also the intel agencies are ecstatic because they love that kind of distraction, you know, and deflection. And so I would say that in order to get a real sort of snapshot of how this works, you have to go into the exotic technology aspect, or we're not going to understand the whole picture. What we're going to do next is take a snapshot of the root of that deep state COG structure, and I'm going to read that through the work of Professor Scott. Before I do it, Miss Olivia, what do you got?
I don't know which direction you want to go in. David Tremina says, DJ, do you suspect they're intentionally making the assassination attempt seem like an obvious inside job to stoke civil unrest and justify a COG takeover before the election?
No, I think they're trying to avoid it looking like an inside job. And I think the Secret Service leader was deflecting all that. So no, I would think if anything, there's been stonewalling, and there's been maybe you know, there's an understanding in the media that they need to follow up, because the alternative, the independent side of the media, is so ubiquitous on these things and coming up with so many facts that they have to co-opt the facts, which means at times they have to take positions that look like they're kind of going along with it. But in general, no. And I have to say, highly, highly irresponsible stuff I've seen from established figures in independent media suggesting that the President Trump's assassination was staged. I can't, you know, the amount of respect I lose for people who discuss that, you wouldn't believe it. They just drop off my radar completely. Because, you know, you have to know the difference about what a false flag is and what a staged incident is. And, you know, when you have a leading political candidate who is being shot, and there are people in the audience who die as a result of that shooting, it's not staged. It's arranged, but staged is highly irresponsible. So I've seen pretty established people talk like this. And for me, you know, I'm done with them for phrasing it that way. It's a distraction and a deflection, and it's part of their own kind of, I don't know what you call, psychic paranoia or whatever, that everything has to be a setup. Look, a lot of things go on that are organized by groups, and that's where the true conspiracy is. Remember, one of the things I did with dark journalism is I established there were three levels of information, and that the highest level, the first level that you always get, is on the top, and that is the establishment story. You know, in the case of the Kennedy assassination, it was the lone shooter who was disgruntled. You know, 9/11, oh, you know, Osama bin Laden from a cave with these people who didn't like America, you know. So that's the official story. And then you have the secondary story. The secondary story is dark journalism. It is usually put forward by writers and researchers and analysts and professors. And they look at the situation. They say, no, what the government is saying is false because of this, 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 and this, and this. And so that's the secondary story. But the third level of that is junk conspiracy, where they put out something that is so ridiculous, you know, like in the case of the Kennedy assassination, the driver did it, you know, and here's a phony CIA video to prove it, you know, which is easily debunkable. This is interesting, because then people look at that and they're like, oh, you know, they're more inclined to go back to the official story because it's too far out. Junk conspiracy is going to be ubiquitous from here on out. And so the ability to sort that using that filter of dark journalism is very important. So when you hear people talking about stage this, remember how important words are and what kind of information, you know, what kind of facts do you have to back up the staging aspect? I've done a lot of research around the deep events that Professor Scott has talked about and all these things through history. And I can show you exactly where, with evidence, the official stories around JFK assassination, Watergate, Iran-Contra, the October surprise, the attacks of 2001, the 9/11 attacks. You know, I can show you where, people who study the COVID op can show you where the official version is here and it's not true. So those things are facts on the ground. They're not extrapolations of like, well, I hate, you know, so-and-so, and so he staged his own thing or whatever. That's nothing. That doesn't mean anything. You know, that means that you have a grudge. So when we get into that, we have to be able to separate those voices out and say, how much of this is just somebody's predetermined, you know, knee-jerk thing against a political figure? Even when things happen that are orchestrated by the Democrat side, I always look for the truth about it on any level, Republican, Democrat, you know, whatever it happens to be. So it doesn't just work that I'm looking for a particular team to get past it. Now, I will say that in recent years, the neocon deep state structure has moved into the liberal left. And so that real leftists don't even recognize, you know, the people who represent their movement. So you have to get clear about that. And then I also want to mention this on the right and stuff. This is just an aside, okay? But, you know, somebody like Andrew Tate, it's a complete psychopath, you know? And so people like Tucker Carlson, who have a large platform, et cetera, should never let a psychopath like that, who's basically a video pimp, you know, nobody should ever give a guy like that a platform. So that's not like, oh, hey, you know, over here we have the right and they're right, and over here we have the left and they're crazy liberals. No, it has nothing to do with that. In fact, you're going to find people who hold very left liberal positions who are very intelligent, and you know, they want the best country they can get. And you have people on the right who you know, are Christians and want a better future for their family. That's the where the real thing is. People's attempts to divide that to make liberals look like lunatics, or make every person who is coming from a more kind of, I wouldn't even call it right wing, but more conservative standpoint, make them seem like some, you know, Bible thumper who is, you know, has his own bunker stacked with ammunition and is ready to get that government or whatever. It's not true. You know, these are very minimal extremes that are constantly put out there. And I think that it's irresponsible when you get large platforms giving people like Tate, for example, you know, and there are others. It's not just this guy, but we have to be very careful about the narratives that they put out about these different sides and how it's easy to make them hate each other. You know, that's not any way forward. That's not any kind of independent journalism either. So let's make sure that we know what we're talking about here. Okay, everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. This is COG Special Election Revealed. We've been getting into a lot tonight, and I want to read now from Professor Scott's investigation of the continuity of government being activated and what the parameters of that activation were. Then we're going to take your questions here in the next 10 minutes or so. Sound good? What do you got out there?
HVZ says, can you explain in layman's terms when and how COG can be invoked?
Yes. Well, technically, remember, it originally came out of the Truman-Eisenhower era post-World War II. And the idea was, we have the atomic bomb, and now these other guys have stolen it. So Russia's doing their own nuclear program, and it's just a matter of time before these other countries get it. So in the event that we have a nuclear exchange and our command structure is decapitated by that nuclear exchange, we need an entire command and control center underground, and the whole extent of it needs to be widespread, well-funded by the government if we're going to survive in this new atomic age. Now, all that was absolutely on target, but you can see problems throughout the setup of the COG program. And then once you get into the Kennedy era, you're looking at actual COG personnel being used in order to remove the president. Now, it's interesting because if we go back with Kennedy, we're going to find something very interesting. One, President Kennedy, he actually loaned out the White House to a director named John Frankenheimer to make 7 days in May. He also helped him with the Manchurian candidate. But 7 days in May is particularly interesting because aides to Kennedy said, oh, yeah, he was so, you know, this was such a passion project for him because he said, people need to know what actually goes on in government. And maybe this movie can give them a window. What is it that happens in that program? Well, there's a COG commander who thinks the president is weak and devises a plot to basically dethrone and depose the president and take over as the commander. And there's a lot of nuances and things in there. By the way, quite interestingly, the character, the general that Burt Lancaster plays, and I've shown this on the program before, but over his shoulder in one of the classic map scenes with Kirk Douglas, they snap the map on, and right over his shoulder is Roswell, New Mexico. Isn't that incredible? I mean, you think about the odds of this, because Roswell wasn't even reported, remember, until 1980 in Stanton Friedman, because it had only come out in Roswell. It was a worldwide story for about a day or two, and then they shut the whole thing down saying it was a weather balloon, and it disappeared. If you look through the books around the UFO file in the 50s and 60s, it's not mentioned in there. So it was completely an underground story. The fact that someone in the know put the COG commander with Roswell behind him is highly significant, in my opinion. There was so much to show on that map. You could have shown anything, but Roswell is, you know, it's unmistakable. President Kennedy had struggles with the Joint Chiefs, with his intelligence apparatus for the Central Intelligence Agency, which when we say CIA, again, it makes it sound like it's just a part of the government. In my opinion, it's an extra constitutional part of the government brought in through the National Security Act. And the people like President Truman, who were kind of corralled into this, even they regretted it later and would write op-eds saying this thing has become a monster. Like, you know, supposed to give intel to the president. So that apparatus, which remember came out of Sullivan and Cromwell in this SNC piece when Alan Dulles was in there writing the charter for the CIA, that is related directly to Manhattan, the whole New York international finance world. So when we get the connection of that with the CIA, we understand how it works. And so Professor Scott gave a pretty good straight up example on this. He would say, let's say you're, you know, in a place like Uzbekistan and you're a company like Exxon and you want to set up all this activity there and pump oil and all the rest of it, but you're afraid a strongman might get in there and throw out all foreign interests or whatever. So what you do is, you know, you make this investment in it, but you tell the CIA it's in our American interest for you guys to control the political situation here. And then the Central Intelligence moves into the system of developing an apparatus for controlling the government. Now, we've seen them, it's on the record that they've deposed leaders, that they've overthrown countries. And if anything, their work is on overdrive right now. As a matter of fact, one of the things I've really pointed out about the Trump assassination attempt, and I'm going to say it again, which is, where's the CIA in all this? How about the CIA in committee on this, like the Secret Service? We get some really interesting answers there. Were there any CIA around this event? Were they scanning this whole idea of a threat that had been brought in, supposedly, about an Iranian team? I want to know what the CIA was doing in the middle of all this. I think you get a lot of interesting answers there. I do remember this classic interview where the CIA assistant CIA director got tripped up when they were asking him, what were you doing? Why did the CIA, why were they involved in the Kennedy assassination? He said, no, you know, at the time we checked at the time to see if any of our agents were in Dealey Plaza. And then the interviewer said, well, that's interesting. And what were you doing? Why would you do that? Why would you check to see if your agents were there? Did you think some of your guys had done it? And he got all flustered and flipped out. And it's very interesting when the CIA got around this, because they constantly were trying to put that story away that they had murdered their own president back in 1963, which if you go through the steps of looking what the CIA activities were and in the cover-up afterwards, you're going to find them right in the heart, one, of the assassination, and two, in the heart of the cover-up. It's essential for us to get a handle on these agencies and their activities. Remember, Professor Scott, in his description of the deep state, would say, well, you have the CIA, but part of that deep state apparatus are the groups that they contract, because they become under less and less authority and less lawful oversight. So that, you know, the Booz Allen Hamiltons of the world have kind of a free hand to monitor you or I, and to go to great lengths beyond anything the CIA would do. So this is the nature of how that system spirals out of control. My suggestion here is that the continuity of government players spiraled out of control by gathering up too much power during that period of time. And there's a clash there in the government with Kennedy wanting executive control over things like the UFO file, for example, over things like our nuclear forces, over things like our intelligence services. And guys like the Dulles, people, because Alan Dulles' brother had been Secretary of State. He was dead by the time Kennedy got in, but Dulles was still his CIA director. But the two brothers, Dulles there, since World War and even before World War II, and the setup of OSS and everything else, they had basically run the world. And, you know, so when they get this guy coming in who is basically a playboy to them, and they're like, oh, he's going to reorder all this stuff. He actually believes in freedom. You know, he believes his own rhetoric. And so I think the planning around his assassination started very early. I'm going to suggest that it started even before he got into office. So by the time he gets into office, and then he really realizes that they were trying to set him up for a nuclear exchange or an invasion of Cuba, then he really starts. You have to remember this about President Kennedy. He was so well informed through his father's business activity and his father's work as the UK ambassador and his father's work as the head of the SEC under Roosevelt. Kennedy's coming into a bank of incredibly rich knowledge. And then in terms of the wealth that the Kennedys possessed, you know, you're talking about kind of the Bill Gates level of wealth back then, you know, because it's such a wealth level, but it's new money as well. Because if you look into Joseph Kennedy's roots, it's not like he's coming from any millionaire family. So they come in and they're a force on their own and a force to be reckoned with. And then John Kennedy injects all this idealism into this process along with Robert Kennedy. And they're realists too, don't get me wrong. They can be tough, you know, on the world stage and everything, but they also are trying to get to nuclear reduction, the threat reduction. They don't want an exchange, and they tend to regard the Pentagon and the CIA as completely out of control. And then the secret apparatus that's operating on the side of exotic technology through NASA, through this UFO file aspect, this is what's not brought out, because at the time there was no reliable reporting around the UFO file. So how would you get at it back then? It's only now in retrospect that we can even piece together some of the things that were taking place. All of these things become very important in the middle of it, and I'm going to show you how. This is interesting. What if I told you that in the testimony of Marina Oswald, in order to put the nail on the coffin of Oswald as the assassin, that there's a COG role in the interviewing and interrogation of Marina Oswald? Well, that's pretty interesting. Let me prove out some of these facts. Some of the main COG personnel were involved in getting those interviews and translating them and interpreting them. So let's start with this. This will give us an early flash of the COG types. On Friday, I reported to you a lot about the work of Winston Lawson, who was the Secret Service agent who helped set up the detail for the Dallas trip for President Kennedy. Now, he was involved with the COG program, and he utilized the White House Emergency Broadcast Radio Network, so-called Doomsday Network, because it's supposed to only be used in the event of a nuclear exchange at the time. But he was utilizing it. One of the key factors behind that communication system is there's no record. So there's not going to be any record of their activities or him setting things up, whatever it happened to be. Now, an interesting thing that Professor Scott and other researchers have noticed is that Lawson lies in his Warren Commission testimony. And the other agents and other people point out he has a series of unusual lies about the actual motorcade which he was in. And it's one of the only shots of Lawson with Kennedy back there, but he's in the background. And he will be one of the key linchpins in helping Kennedy to set up the Dallas trip on every stage. But he, again, is utilizing this emergency network, which isn't used, by the way, when they're doing routine campaign events. So here's a couple of interesting pieces, and then the COG personnel sweep in to help get Marina Oswald on the record. And watch how COG is right in the heart of all these government activities, especially around emergencies. And so we're going to find COG personnel involved in things like, for example, around this Trump event, or around the fact that Joe is stepping down, or if Joe appears to be dead. Whenever there's a gap in the authority, you're going to look and find COG people. Okay. Now, there was always confusion early on about how they knew to go to Parkland Hospital at the time. So I'm just going to take this directly out of his research, and then we'll get to the next COG person. Lawson later reported to the Secret Service that he heard on his radio that we should proceed to the nearest hospital. He wrote also that he requested Chief Curry to have the hospital contacted. This is after President Kennedy was shot. And also that our lead car assisted the motorcycles in escorting President's vehicle to Parkland Hospital. In other words, after hearing something on the White House communication access radio, Lawson helped ensure that the president's limousine would follow the route already set up by the motorcycles for this epileptic incident that happened before the motorcade got there. And this is always a weird story in the middle of all this, which is there was an epileptic in the middle of Dealey Plaza and caused all this police attention. And then they put the epileptic in the ambulance. And by the time he got to Parkland Hospital, he had vanished. They got out of the ambulance. So it's always been left there for researchers to interpret. Was this just a weird decoy to get the police distracted? And so what we have is Scott dissecting this and saying, well, Lawson, for some reason, takes the route directly to Parkland Hospital. And then Lawson is saying, oh, yeah, you know, I've got this on this White House emergency channel. In his very detailed Warren Commission testimony, Lawson said nothing about the route having already been cleared. On the contrary, he testified we had to do something, the stopping of cars and holding our hands out the windows and blowing the sirens and horns to get through to Parkland. The White House communications radio channel used by Lawson and others communicated almost directly with the WHCA base at Mount Weather in Virginia. That's COG headquarters, the base facility of the COG network. From there, Secret Service communications were relayed to the White House through batteries of communication equipment connecting Mount Weather with the White House and Raven Rock, the underground Pentagon, 60 miles north of Washington, as well as with every U.S. military unit stationed around the globe. Now, Jack Crichton, head of the 488 Army Intelligence Reserve Unit of Dallas, was also part of the Mount Weather COG network. This was in his capacity as Chief of Intelligence for Dallas Civil Defense, which worked out of an underground emergency operating center, because it was intended for continuity of government operations during an attack. The center was fully equipped with communications equipment. In retrospect, the Civil Defense program is remembered derisively as having advised school children in the event of an atomic attack to hide their heads under their desk. But in 1963, civil defense was one of the urgent responsibilities assigned to the Office of Emergency Planning, which is why Crichton, as much as Secret Service agent Lawson, could be in direct touch with Emergency Communications Network at Mount Weather COG Command. Jack Crichton is of interest because he and Deputy George Lumpkin of the 488 Army Intelligence Reserve Unit, both friends, were responsible for choosing the Russian interpreter for Marina Oswald. And they went and to the right-wing community for the Russians, the kind of white Russian community in there in Dallas. And the guy's name was Mamontov. And it's always controversial because it appears that he led her in all this testimony. And because no one else was speaking Russian there, that he was able to create this entire testimony of, oh, Oswald had this rifle, he hated Kennedy, he was going to kill these other people, he was going to kill Nixon, you know, he was a maniac, he killed General Walker, you know, he tried to shoot General Walker, all these things. That is all COG interpretation. It's all based on two COG guys getting the interpreter. So we're seeing the COG continuity of government players active in the entire overthrow there of the United States leader. And they're right in the heart of it. You know, now a lot of people will look at different groups and what they were up to, and they'll say, well, you know, military intelligence and the Central Intelligence Agency, they were also playing their own roles in the middle of all this. But the COG part, I mean, who even talks about the COG aspects? The fact that the COG people were in there manipulating the testimony of Marina Oswald is quite remarkable and lets us know how deep this group operates. And then we ask ourselves, what do we even know about COG? What do we know about the personnel? We actually know more about, you know, the president's staff or even the Secret Service leader Who knows anything about the people who are operating in the continuity of government program? That's by design. And we're going to say exactly why here in a moment and take your questions. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show, going deep here tonight to try to understand the COG level in the presidential election of the special report. We'll be with you here about another 15 minutes. And before I go any further, Miss Olivia, you're up.
Robert Ayala says, DJ, after the failed assassination attempt, do you think that there could be an elimination of some of the less trusted individuals involved in the operation? And Dash Rendar says, is it possible local law enforcement were compromised, possibly through the Promise software scandal tied to Ghislaine's twin sisters, Isabel and Christine?
Oh, interesting. I think what you're getting in the Trump assassination story, the attempted assassination of President Trump, is the local law enforcement stumbling into these deep state players. So they're stumbling in and they're watching things like, you know, this person who is either crooks or playing crooks on this roof turn an actual rifle on them. So those people are, you know, it reminds me very much of the cop who went into the Texas School Book Depository. And when he runs in, it's only, you know, a minute after the shooting of Kennedy, and he finds Oswald in the lunchroom. And he asks the, you know, manager of the Texas School Book Depository, is this guy an employee? And he says, yeah. And so then they run up to the sixth floor. So they're just cops who are kind of in the middle of all this activity. Obviously, if Oswald was on the second floor there, he couldn't have got all the shots off, ran down the stairs, past all the people, and then run into the lunchroom. So, you know, you have innocent players in the middle of these deep state actions. So the cops, for example, who are standing on each other's shoulders to get a look up over that roof, and they see Crooks there and he turns the gun on them, that's outside of all this activity of Secret Service lying. You know, these guys have put that story on the record. We know that they saw, before Crooks shot at President Trump, they saw him up there with a gun and he was pointing it at law enforcement. That should have been enough to shut the whole thing off. So if anything, I think that we're getting some kind of honest responses out of the regular law enforcement on the ground in Pennsylvania. And the larger lying is reserved for this Secret Service Homeland Security apparatus or the stonewalling, because there's some aspects there, you know. Here's another local law enforcement story from this case, which I find fascinating. And it just came out yesterday, where these two local law enforcement people go up after the Secret Service has taken the shot at this person who's been identified as Crooks. And this guy in a gray suit comes up the ladder and you know, he's up there with them. And he says, I want pictures, the pictures that you're taking of Crooks. I want you to send them to this cell phone right now. And they automatically assume that he's a Secret Service agent. But later it becomes very strange and vague about who is this guy. And then he's identified later as maybe an ATF agent. And then finally he's completely, nobody's even talking about him. Now there are pictures of this guy. So, you know, in the middle of the Kennedy assassination, you had people who had rushed up the grassy knoll and these Secret Service people came down and said, oh, you know, what did you see? Keep looking or whatever. Or people who identified themselves as Secret Service saying, get out of this area with your cameras, you know, take it away. And they would identify themselves as Secret Service. But when you account for the actual people in the Kennedy assassination, all the Secret Service people are accounted for. They're not running around in the grassy knoll. So who were those people? In this case, there isn't any straight identification of this individual in a gray suit on top of the building asking for the pictures that they were taking of this individual, which leads me to believe that either the person they're identifying as Crook is incorrect, or that there's somebody else involved that they expected to be there or something, because this guy wants pictures that they're taking. And they do, in fact, without hesitation, send to his phone right off the bat the pictures that they're taking of this dead would-be assassin. This is one of the weirdest moments so far in all of it. And then the only thing that we can get out of this is maybe it was an ATF agent. You know, look, they didn't mention the ATF before this came up. Now I think we're going to find, okay, ATF, where are the CIA people in the middle of all this? Have you heard any mention of CIA? There are CIA personnel there somewhere. You know, we're going to find that out in the story too. What else you got?
Walter Bosley says the CIA is keeping a very low profile in this. And Rick says, DJ, is it possible that Lansdale had connections with COG?
Oh, absolutely. Remember, there's this fascinating picture. I want to say this about Lansdale, that wherever he was basically instructed to, on a number of different occasions in his role with CIA and the upper levels of the Air Force, to go into these countries, suss out the leaders and figure out who was going to be strong and on our side and who had to be taken out. And over again, in all these things that he does, you'll find the leaders being taken out. So he is an expert at overthrow, PB overthrow. And what you find fascinating about him is that he shows up in the testimony of Fletcher Prouty. And Fletcher Prouty, of course, being Mr. X, talking to Garrison and giving him all this information about it. Prouty's the intermediary between the CIA and the Joint Chiefs, and they send him to Antarctica during the Kennedy assassination. And he thought it was weird that they did this, but the person who sent him there was Lansdale. And when he came back, he realized, oh, the reason that they did this is because I would have been in charge of setting up security for that trip, or I would have been overseeing it or in touch with the Army intelligence people doing it. So they didn't want him in the mix. But here's an interesting thing, and that's not often recounted. This is so unusual. When Lansdale sends him off to South Pole, he retires. He retires on Halloween before the assassination. And later, when Prouty is going through different pictures of Dealey Plaza, he says, "That's Ed Lansdale." Right in the middle of the audience. So Lansdale's in Dealey Plaza. And then he shares it with a number of other intel personnel and military people. And they were all like, oh, what was Lansdale doing there? So Lansdale, only a couple months previously, had done all this work with Vietnam and the Diem brothers. And there are all these pictures of him, you know, hugging the brothers and being like, new leadership in Vietnam and all this stuff in relation to this. And then 3 weeks before Kennedy's assassinated, the Diem brothers are assassinated at the Central Intelligence Agency, enabling the plot, which is one of the reasons Kennedy is so furious with the CIA at the very end. But it was Lansdale who was right in the middle of that. You have these pictures of him, you know, buddy-buddy with the Diem brothers. His presence there and his moves and his activities are extraordinary when you think about basically his main talent is government overthrow. So for him to be, you know, milling about after retiring, quote unquote, from the Air Force only a couple of weeks earlier, his last big job was sending Prouty to Antarctica. So we have a weird chapter there again, and you can always get a handle on this strange group because there's something about them that is operating in this twilight. And they command tremendous, tremendous power. And they seem to be plugged in to the COG network underground and this exotic technology overground. Somehow it has not been properly investigated. Those are the types of answers that we need because we brush up against them when we get into these deep events. And trust me, the Trump assassination attempt is a deep event in classic Scott terms anyway.
Joseph Farrell says, yes. DJ, Lansdale and Yamashita's gold, RE, my hidden system of finance necessary to COG.
Absolutely. Wow. Isn't that incredible? There's an incredible story. I'm trying to think of the book, but it's Farrell's book. I think it's the Breakaway Civilization book. And it's all about how Lansdale was the one that they tasked with torturing the driver for the Emperor of Japan to find out where that hidden gold was at the end of the war. So how intricate is, you know, integral is Lansdale to all this? It's extraordinary. And I will say this for those interested in the hot zone research. When Kennedy is discussing and this document only came out in 2014, when Kennedy was discussing a national security incident, excuse me, that needed to take place at think of Bahia, which was Hemingway's wonderful little oasis there in Cuba. It's very interesting because the people that he's speaking with are the CIA director, Richard John McCone at the time, Edward Lansdale, and Robert Kennedy. And all the people, when this came out, you know, all these Kennedy news people went to all these Kennedy historians and said, what was the national security incident that was going to take place at the villa, Ernest Hemingway's villa? Of course, Ernest Hemingway had already left, you know, and he'd left Cuba and come back to America. And he was already dead, I believe. But his villa was still there and he still owned it. And there was this whole thing that I've pointed out before about a national security effort to get Hemingway's vault out of Cuba. But the national security incident that they're planning to risk takes place inside. And none of the Kennedy historians know what that was. My interpretation is that because of Kennedy's work with Mary Hemingway in smuggling the vault contents over to America in a shrimp boat, that the whole hot zone reporting that we've done on this program, that what Kennedy was doing basically in contemplation with Lansdale and the CIA director and attorney general was, how do we get that vault out of Cuba? The reason what was in that vault of Hemingway's and that they were willing to risk in the middle of the kind of nuclear tensions and a national security incident at his villa, you have to wonder the contents of that. And I certainly have laid out my suspicions in my Hot Zone documentaries. One
Joseph
more.
Says it was covert wars and breakaway civilization. So Lansdale, I think, was definitely in COG's early days.
Absolutely. And he's such the role model for it because everything that he does, you know, it's interesting because he's a remarkably effective individual. And it seems like, you know, he's operating in a kind of twilight of morality where anything that is in the interest of the United States, he's going to go for. And the secrecy level of somebody like that, that, you know, there's a picture, a wonderful picture of Lansdale standing there, basically arm in arm with Alan Dulles and Nathan Twining. And of course, the Twining memo right at the heart of the UFO file and people working deeply with the UFO file. So there you have, you know, the assassination king, Dulles standing there with Lansdale, the overthrow guy with the deep history all the way back to Yamashita's gold. Absolutely incredible. And all right, so what I'll do, I'll read one last quote of this COG system, then we'll take a few more questions and then we're out. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. Fantastic ideas from tonight, and it's great to see Bosley and Farrell out there. Of course, we're going to be talking to Joseph Farrell later this week. So we've got some exciting things coming up there. I won't even mention what they are, but watch out. This is going to be something else. I want to mention this too. I mentioned that this whole thing about Russia and America meeting and the fact that they have things on a presidential level to discuss relating to extreme secrecy around exotic technology in the UFO file. This is important because Gorbachev has gone on the record already and said it was part of their conversation with Reagan. He said it. It's not somebody guessing at it. It's not somebody theorizing about it. Gorbachev said, I discussed the UFO file with Reagan. I have the clip. I've shown it on many programs. And it's funny because at the time, our own media deep state wasn't ready to promote UFOs. And so they were, you know, nervous laughter and that they didn't, you know, they were scared to death of what he was revealing. It wasn't until 2017 and the CIA push that they wanted the whole UFO threat thing out there. But so let's look at that and then think about Khrushchev and Kennedy. And remember in that first interaction with Kennedy, Khrushchev thinks he can bully him, and he actually swears at him, trying to get a reaction out of him. Kennedy's smart enough to not end the session and to kind of take, you know, take it a little bit to get to a deeper level of exchange with this guy. But when Kennedy asks that it's only him and the translator, you know, his own apparatus, Central Intelligence, State Department freak out. Later, when Reagan tries to do this, and Reagan, now it's 20 years after that, because in between there's not much good interaction. You have Nixon's interaction, which is closely monitored. But by the time you get to Reagan, Reagan's really trying to set up and share Star Wars, which is, you know, SDI Star Wars is something that President Trump is trying to revive as part of this 2025 plan. Now, he wants to, Reagan, also do the same thing, and he does. And at Reykjavik, you know, Gorbachev has this whole thing about, you know, Reagan saying with the UFO file, you know, if they attack us, are you going to help and all the rest? When you get to Trump, I've never seen more of an outrageous response from the deep state, the media, and the whole bit as to when he wants to have those private meetings with Putin. They made them practically impossible. And what's interesting, it goes back here. Because what does Kennedy do before he is assassinated? He tells his CIA director, I want to share all the high-threat UFO cases with the Soviets so we don't have a nuclear incident over it. I'm instructing you to put those cases together so I can share them. By the way, we have a joint moon mission with Russia. Who are we teetering on the edge of World War III with right now? Russia. It's the same problem. And, you know, it's the same overlap that we're experiencing. And then again, when you get into the weird vacuous leadership thing with President Biden and the assassination attempt, aren't we crisscrossing again with these same forces? So we're going to have to sort of resolve this and, you know, get it to be something in the public consciousness of understanding, or else we're just going to keep replaying this pattern like a broken record. Because these people who are trying to control what happens during those Russian US summits, to me, there's a hidden level there, and I've attributed it to the fact that Russia is at the same level as we are with the exotic technology UFO file piece. There's a discussion that needs to take place there. And oddly enough, somebody like Trump is well-versed in it through the fact of his Uncle John. This is a major piece that needs to be put on the table for us to understand the full picture around this. Because if you don't have that, and it's easier not to talk about. I understand that. But nonetheless, if you miss that, you're kind of missing too much of the boat. It's practically the whole ballgame, in my opinion. So that's why, you know, look to the summit meetings, Kennedy, Khrushchev, Reagan, Gorbachev, and Trump and Putin. This is essential. If you want to understand these things correctly, yeah.
Ms. Kiva's mom says they went crazy when Tucker talked to Putin. Mm-hmm. CC says, what was Putin's response to the assassination attempt? And Kate Garcia says, after Trump assassination attempt, Putin has vamped up security tech at his palace by the coast.
Yeah, he put out some kind of weird picture of him driving around. And I don't know if it was like a defiance thing. Like, you might try that there, but you're not going to get me. This is interesting. The day of the assassination attempt, Russia put out this statement like, of course, after you put this guy through the legal wheels, now these other things are happening, you know, and they saw it as more of, you know, this administration going after its political enemies. That is very essential because they understand it very well, and they also understand the reasons for it better than you and I. Because they're right in the heart of all of this secrecy exchange that is going on. And one of the things I like to point out is that Russia knows a great deal. For example, we just had this big Apollo anniversary. Now, this is interesting. 55th anniversary of the Apollo missions, landing on the moon. You didn't hear hardly anything about it. Hey, what happened to Artemis? That was supposed to happen this year. We're supposed to be landing on the moon. Is that still happening? I don't hear anything about it. This is very strange. So something in the mix of all this, but certainly the Russians are aware, one, of what took place in relation to what we did with Apollo. They're aware very deeply because it was trying to be pinned on them about the Kennedy assassination. You bet they researched it. And with their satellites, you know, certainly they know what took place during 9/11 as well. So, you know, they're very, as adversaries, they're very well informed. And in my opinion, their program around UFO file secrecy is also very extensive. I'm going to read a couple of things about this deep state apparatus around COG from Professor Scott's essay, and just to round out this program. And we'll take a couple more questions and we're out.
Okay.
Very good. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. This is a special report, COG presidential election, on the heels of the assassination attempt of President Trump, and then the lack of Secret Service support and protection, very reminiscent of previous assassinations, politically motivated by the deep state in America. And also the disappearance of the president now for 5 days, and then showing up with a tweet resigning from the re-election race, but keeping on as the president. And then them promoting Kamala Harris as the candidate, and then him supposedly calling in as proof of life to this campaign event, but we haven't seen him in 5 days. Highly alarming. If this was a foreign country we were looking at, nobody had seen Putin for a week, we'd have assumed a coup had taken place. Mm-hmm. So something is rotten in Denmark on this, and the continuity of government piece is where we need to look, because they stand to move in the situation of an emergency. So that's where we would look next. Let's talk about them here for a minute. Let's go very early now. Iran-Contra exchange. This was printed in the New York Times without any journalistic comments or follow-up. And it's questioning of Oliver North by Congressman Jack Brooks. Colonel North, in your work at the NSC, were you not assigned at one time to work on plans for the continuity of government in the event of a major disaster? Both North's attorney and Senator Daniel Inouye, Democratic chair of the committee, who's also part of ATIP, or the OSAP program with Harry Reid around the UFO file, showed they were aware of the issue. North's counsel, in an agitated fashion, "Mr. Chairman, Senator Inouye, I believe the question touches upon a highly sensitive and classified area, so may I request that you not touch upon this." Brooks, "I was particularly concerned, Mr. Chairman, because I read in the Miami papers and several others that there had been a plan developed by that same agency, a contingency plan, in the event of an emergency that would suspend the American Constitution, and I was deeply concerned about it and wondered if that was an area that he had worked in. I believe that it was, and I wanted to get his confirmation." Inouye, "I most respectfully request that the matter not be touched upon at this stage." You couldn't talk about COG in 1987. Something changed rather dramatically. Now, what happens is, and it's very interesting, some of the personnel that helped Reagan change the rules for COG included Donald Rumsfeld, who was a CEO of a pharmaceutical company, and Dick Cheney, who was basically a low-level Wyoming congressman at the time. But both of them had worked in the Nixon and Ford administrations in different ways, so their tentacles ran very deep. COG doesn't just run government, by the way. It runs media people are involved with it. Entertainment people are involved with it. It has all sorts of representatives. And one of the things that we found out about the 50s COG program is that Eisenhower put the head of CBS, the president of CBS, in the COG planning group. Okay, this is interesting. Reagan had installed at FEMA a counterinsurgency team that he had already assembled as governor of California. The team was headed by Army Lieutenant Louis Jafrida, who had attracted Reagan's attention by a paper he had written while at the U.S. Army War College advocating forcible warrantless detention of millions of Americans in concentration camps. Reagan first installed Jafrida as head of the California National Guard and called on him to design Operation Cable Splicer. Now, I want to say this in Reagan's defense. When he was governor of California, there was an absolute siege of the universities. People were blowing up buildings and all the rest of it. So the fact that he got around people like this doesn't surprise me so much. But later, I think they came to influence his version that came out. And then in the background, they sort of took advantage of the fact that he wasn't really on top of the details of the program. Reagan first installed Jafrida as head of the California National Guard, and then he devised Operation Cable Slicer, a martial law plan to legitimize the arrest and detention of anti-war activists and other political dissidents. These plans were refined with the assistance of British counterintelligence expert Sir Robert Thompson, who'd used massive detention and deportation to deal with the 1950s communist insurgency in what is now Malaysia. So the techniques that they had used overseas, now they were looking at for the American population. This, to me, is a huge change in how things were viewed. Just like I think flooding the streets of America with drugs was a change from the policy that had gone on before, where I think they had dealt drugs through the intelligence agencies and through these other governments in foreign countries. But somehow there was a change in that come the 1960s. At the time, a few people, including myself, attached much importance to the Chardy story about COG. Chardy himself suggested that Reagan's Attorney General William French Smith had interviewed to stop the COG plan from being presented to the president. And in 1985, Jafrida, who had designed this martial law program, was forced out of office for having spent government money to build a private residence. But the COG planning not only continued, it expanded. And it was built up through George Bush, who was the VP for Reagan at the time, and Oliver North. And they created this whole program, and they changed the COG designation from nuclear emergency to emergency. So anything that came up that was an emergency, that warranted COG being activated. Now, it's interesting. In the 90s, when Clinton got in there, there was a pretense that COG had been closed up. And there were people who were, you know, very knowledgeable, like James Bamford and guys like that, who wrote extensively about this, and they were under the assumption that COG had been shut down. All along, it had been developing and outside of the reach of the Clinton administration. What's funny is by the end of the Clinton administration, Bamford chimes in and says, oh no, like they're aware of this program, that program, and that program. Suddenly, the Clintons are switched on at the end of their administration to COG, but the knowledge of COG in the 90s went away, and I think they were able to move this because of the fall of Russia and the Soviet Union at the time. Now, a couple of things that I think are noteworthy considering what's going on now. So during the end of the Reagan presidency, the purpose of COG planning had officially changed. It was no longer for arrangements after nuclear war, but for any national security emergency. This is crucial. Any occurrence, including military attack, technological emergency, or other emergency that seriously degrades or seriously threatens the national security of the United States. This is a totally legitimate program dating back to Eisenhower of planning extraordinary measures for America devastated in a nuclear attack, but it was now being converted to confer equivalent secret powers to the White House for anything it considered an emergency. This is how this system grew and got out of hand, and then was actually activated during the 9/11 attacks. And we got the September 11th emergency, which was kicked in on September 14th, and every president has signed on to it ever since. So we're still under the September 11th emergency powers. COG was activated, and the Patriot Act came out of that. So COG has already made that huge impact in how we have conducted the country, and also in the loss of more and more constitutional powers. So I think when we think about this group and what may be their ultimate play, they can continue on and continue to erode that structure, or they can take circumstances like these and try to speed up that COG clock. This is the nature of why the 2024 election is so important and so crucial. The COG group is completely under the radar. I don't think there's anybody talking about COG in relation to the 2024 election, unless you could turn to this program. And I think it's such a crucial aspect, and I want to put it on the record. I want people to see that COG is involved directly in all of these pieces, and that the people involved, like General Guillo, for example, he is now in charge of NORAD, NORTHCOM, and he's the COG combatant commander in the event of a nuclear or any kind of emergency that they have, all they have to do, and again, it doesn't have to be nuclear. They change that rule. Once they flip the switch for emergency powers, and I've suggested one of the reasons they dangled the UFO threat out there was for this very reason. Once they flip that switch, then you get Geo as the combatant commander of the entire United States, and all he has to do is set up regional governors. So you lose representation, congressional representation. You know, there's no local powers anymore. It all devolves to this regional governor aspect. And their mandate supposedly is to secure conditions until such times as an election can be held. Well, how's that working out in Ukraine? They're not doing any elections at all. So in my opinion, the minute that they seize power, there would be no reason for them to give it back unless they were giving it back to an absolute puppet regime. So the threat and the danger around COG, I can't overstate. But I will say this also, that I think the more that it's brought into the radar and brought into the conversation in relation to 2024 and the election, then the more, you know, the less likely it's going to be that they're going to be able to activate it on an unwitting public. I wanted to read one last thing from this, and then we'll take a couple more questions and we're out. So there was a huge militarization of domestic United States law enforcement that started after 9/11, and they brought in NORTHCOM. And I think I showed, I believe I already showed the map of what they plan to do. Let me just make sure. Did I show that map? There's a map layout of the different regions that they plan to lay out. And it's kind of interesting to me because for them, it solves a lot of problems, like the big struggle against this whole populism piece can be just thrown out the window with enough of an emergency happening. So here's the piece that I think might give us the hook for COG for now. From its beginning in 1982, two of the key planners, and this is again from Professor Scott's essay, two of the key planners for the secret COG planning committee were Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, the same two men who implemented COG on 9/11. The committee had been established by Reagan under secret executive order NSDD 55, September 14, 1982. Despite what Weiner had implied, the committee continued to meet without interruption until the George W. Bush presidency in 2001. So this idea that it disbanded during the Clinton administration is completely untrue. It just kind of was offshored, as it were. Thus, Cheney and Rumsfeld continued their secret planning during the Clinton presidency, even after both men were, by the time, heads of major corporations and not in the government. Think Halliburton here. Andrew Cockburn cites a Pentagon source to support a claim that the Clinton administration had no idea what was going on with COG in the 1990s. That's interesting because I also believe that Clinton was left out of the loop on the UFO file, and there are interesting incidents if you watch the Clinton presidency. In one of them, he reads a letter from a 9-year-old, and he's reading it, and it says, "Are there aliens at a secret base in Area 51? And he says, "Well, I want to tell you, little Janie, that I haven't, been told this by my Air Force, and if it's true, I want to hear about it too." But just this weird, that's kind of a weird thing to even go with, even for a photo op. Okay. It's important to understand that the COG Doomsday Project in the 1980s involved more than planning and exercises. It also oversaw Project 908, which was the construction of a multi-billion-dollar infrastructure for an alternative government. The key element of this was an $8 billion communications and logistics program headquartered in Huachuca, Arizona, the headquarters for Army intelligence. This is very important because a lot has come out of this particular fort, and we never hear about it. It's not on the map at all, but I think their importance is quite fascinating. In conclusion, despite initial failures in the communications network, it was ready to be put into operation and utilized on September 11, 2001 by Vice President Cheney. Key commands, including the implementation of COG itself, appear to have been made over the highest classification security network. This may explain, and this is how we started, why a Boeing E-4B Advanced Airborne Command Post or Doomsday Plane, the mobile communication center for COG's shadow government, was seen around 10 a.m. in the prohibited airspace above the White House. So the COG group has already, we've seen them in action. And by the way, that E-4B thing is not on the record. Everyone knows that it took place, but it's not in the official record of the 9/11 Commission. It's not in Pentagon records, et cetera. So COG can operate, can walk invisibly through history. And this is the nature, I think, of the problem that we have, the continuity of government group. What we find is that their personnel show up over and over again in the middle of these deep events in American history. With that, Miss Olivia, we'll take two more questions and we're out.
Oh, wait, just two. Okay. Well, I'm going to bundle them then.
Okay.
Okay. So let's start with the election. Maddie Mosef, how am I supposed to get any work done, DJ? Just kidding. Biden's out. The cackling hyena is in. She's more replaceable than a toothbrush or razor. Global Atlantis says Kamala is nothing more than a puppet on a string.
Oh, yeah.
Adrian Smith says Harris is a temporary placeholder. Ray Story says, so DJ, how long before Kamala gets replaced? Wolfgang McCarthy says the DNC is going to be the mother of all psyops. And CC Jarvis says, what are the odds that the Democratic machine inserts RFK Jr.?
Zero on the last one. No, RFK Jr., we, you know, followed and even promoted Bobby's campaign at the time because he has great ideas and he's a great candidate. His campaign, you know, the people behind the campaign didn't put Bobby in the proper light for this election, and also over and over again were portraying things that weren't going to happen, like, oh, and he could win in a contingency election or something like that. You know, you put Bobby, you know, if someone doesn't get to 270 electoral votes in this election, nobody in Congress is going to vote for Bobby. You know, they really don't like that he's exposed a number of things. But President Trump, as we found in the leaked call from RFK Jr., and this came out, and it was Trump saying to him, look, you know, you've done a lot around vaccines. We can do something big, you know, and he's basically reaching out to him and suggesting, you know, throw your support my way and we can do some things. Earlier on, there was an overture to Bobby to become Trump's VP. We found that on the record. But the Bobby camp refused. That was last year. The Bobby's campaign, when it went independent, there was not enough time to set up a genuine run for the presidency to win independently. And then there was Shanahan. And so there are problems in that campaign. And the people running the campaign also, I think, putting out the wrong, not sticking to the main 5 points of why this guy should be president, you know, the transparency issue and bringing back dignity, you know, and being honest and things like that. And like, what, here's his 5-point economic plan, you know. Instead, it was very wobbly and having him do these interviews everywhere that are about everything, you know, that's not a presidential focus. So I think Bobby, what's interesting is he's very well set up to run in 2028 after Trump's term, if Trump gets in. And that's the other thing. I don't think it's a cakewalk for Trump to get in and post that assassination attempt. You know, you did hear a lot of voices in the media just saying, you know, Trump's in, that's it. You know, that's the end of the election right there. It doesn't work that way. You know, 3 months is an eternity in politics. And, you know, you have to fight for every step of the way. So it's not going to be a cakewalk by a long shot. Nobody should think it will be. If anything, they have to fight for every vote. But no, Bobby can't win this time. It's clear. You're already into August practically. And, you know, you have to win 270 electoral votes to win the presidency. That's the way it goes. And there's no state set up where Bobby could win. So he can't get any electoral votes this time out. I think he's put some very good ideas on the record. And I think in 2028, that apparatus of that independent party that he started can be in a position to really challenge the Republican or Democrat. The other thing is, you know, Bobby had a press conference yesterday, and the people who are behind that campaign really should have navigated that as a new possibility, you know, because it was all about Biden stepping down. And Bobby went in with some kind of boilerplate things against Trump. So, you know, that's just misfiring, because the whole thing is, who has the job, right? Biden has the job, and he's trying to promote his Vice President Harris now. That's the, you know, the person politically that you need to be going after. And this whole thing about going after Trump, to me, especially with Trump throwing all these lifelines to him, like, hey, you know, be part of my administration. I don't know. To me, that seems the wrong approach, 100%. And so I don't know who's in Bobby's ear about that. But I've seen a lot of people who are pushing against the Trump thing, and they don't have very good solutions. You know, what do they want? I mean, do you want Kamala Harris? And do you want, you know, to keep the border like this? By the way, she was in charge of the border. And, you know, they will destroy America with that border, plain and simple. So, you know, in the last episode, and I think this is going to be a mantra for the rest of the year to the election, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. You know, Trump's not perfect, but he's a whole lot better than anything that the Democrats have to offer in terms of constitutional rule, the Second Amendment. The border is the absolute essential thing. If you flood this country with people from different countries who don't like America, and if you're doing this on purpose to collapse the country, that, you know, you're not going to get anywhere. You will have, you know, you'll have a revolution in America. So that's the first thing you have to do. And Trump will do that. There's no way he showed he would do it in the first time. So on that, he's incredibly strong. And I think with the connections in the background, you know, it doesn't mean he's perfect, but he's a much better option and opportunity. And this time around, Bobby can't do it. So what are you going to do? Are you going to throw it to this, you know, Leviathan of the Democrats? I hope not. I hope not. No, I would highly, highly recommend you vote for President Trump come November 5th. No question about it, because that, you know, regime, which was Biden's and now is going to be Harris's, is an absolute nightmare and a disaster for America. So if Trump doesn't get in, there's going to be hell to pay, in my opinion. Yeah.
Okay. This is a fantastic bundle.
Okay. All
right. So David Tormina, DJ, where do you think Elon fits in the COG group? His immediate pleading, $43 million a month for Trump the day after the assassination attempt. Is he covering for them by helping Trump or ... Also, Elon just pulled Tesla headquarters from California and severely criticized Newsom. Is he signaling that Newsom was involved in the assassination? Do you think there's a Nazi element similar to JFK? I'm going to continue. Johnny Ricardo Bone, DJ, do you think Musk is courting Trump through campaign donations to bring Musk in on the UFO file? And Donna Cartier, Trump better start talking UFO file and JFK files. If he dies, he takes the info with him.
Wow. Well, that's really true. Look, this is a fantastic opportunity because of the tragedy that was nearly, you know, it was nearly a tragedy. It was just barely averted, but it opens up the whole spectacle about the Kennedy assassination. You know, the Kennedy assassination would have been a tragedy had it just been Oswald with an old gun shooting from that window. All that is a fantasy. You know, it was an organized, triangulated shooting with a group of shooters. And the group harkened back again into this secret phantom intelligence arm in the CIA and the COG apparatus. If you look at the moves that Musk has been making, they are to guarantee that, you know, he will get the best government contracts and that his work to privatize space will not be interrupted. He wants to get in on Trump's good side now that Trump has what Nixon called the big mo, you know, the momentum going into the fall. Is dramatic. There's no question about it. And I think, you know, basically he Musk saw the handwriting on the wall. I remember initially he had, he was in favor of the Florida governor. And, you know, he offered him, I think, the first slot on X Spaces. So, you know, when you think about this and that whole situation, there's a lot of opportunism with Musk, make no mistake about it. And he is incredibly connected in with that DARPA piece. You know, the fact of what his dust up with Gavin Newsom, I thought he was absolutely right on calling out the whole program about Newsom and the ridiculous thing that California is doing, which is absurd, which is saying if you're child has gender questions or whatever, they can do all the surgeries and make all the decisions without notifying the parents. It's sick and insane. And so, you know, he did the right thing getting out of there, as did Joe Rogan, right? Getting out of California. A lot of those guys look at that machine and just say, oh, you know, they understand that California is just in incredible decline. And as someone who lived there, you know, that, you know, that's terrible, because I think California is fantastic and the people there are wonderful, but the government is absolutely compromised, unfortunately. Yes.
Okay. So Psychic Somatic says, it's frustrating seeing one person used as a scapegoat. It makes true accountability nearly impossible. Philip K. Dick Film Festival, 60 days to bury the report. Right, boy genius, if COG is activated, would the various military investigative agencies supersede the FBI and DOJ in prosecuting crimes like assassination?
Interesting. Well, when the president is missing, okay, COG comes into play as an important talking point for people who want to get to answers. So they're the ones who are activated in the event of an emergency, after all. Then you go to nuclear football questions, because, you know, let's go back when Eisenhower had this, you know, big problem during his presidency, which is sometimes called a heart attack, sometimes called a stroke. By the way, I wanted to mention this about the Secret Service director. Her birth date is repeated in the media over and over again as 1970, and then it's repeated as 1971. And then in her official bios, it goes 70, 71, question mark.
Weird.
Don't you think everyone would have for the leader of the Secret Service? I mean, this is very strange.
That is strange.
So our friend there, Cheadle, people don't seem to know what her birth date is. So maybe that could be the next question that they ask her in Congress. But anyway, Eisenhower had this major heart attack stroke situation. And during that period of time, Nixon had to take over. And, you know, they did it officially, and everybody knew what was happening and that Eisenhower was in the hospital and all the rest of it. This is totally different. Now, if Eisenhower had stepped down in the middle of that, you know, I'm sure they would have said something, you know, done a press conference, press release. All of this stuff that's going on is bizarre. We don't know anything about Biden. We don't know, you know, what we know is this weird thing that was let out. Then we know that this weird phone call, supposedly. So not seeing the president opens up the possibility that COG is going to become active. There's no question about it. It moves that clock. You know, they have this, I've mentioned this before, the scientists have that doomsday clock, and they are like, you're getting closer and closer to midnight in terms of a nuclear exchange, and they track it, and it gets very close, and sometimes it backs off, you know, and you always hope that it backs off, of course. Well, the COG thing, I think, works exactly like that, too, because it's raised now the chances of it, the possibility of COG being activated is absolutely being raised in a situation where the president's missing. You know, he's not in public, and they're not genuinely explaining. They have a doctor's statement saying, oh, he's, you know, his lungs are clearing up just fine, but they don't even show a photo of the man. This is highly bizarre, and it lends one toward this idea that, you know, in another country, you would think a coup has taken place of some kind. So we're still waiting to hear, you know, and waiting to see. And, you know, I don't jump to conclusions, but the president missing for 5 days in action is just highly bizarre. And I'm sure at some point, if he's there, that they'll trot him out and they'll say, oh, you know, all those people talking about if he was alive or not. Look, it doesn't matter if he is in fact alive. The fact that they kept him off for 5 days is bizarre, you know, and we have to get to answers on that. It's much more important than anything going on in the country. Who's leading the country? Who has their finger on the nuclear button? Who's leading up the national defense? Who's running the country? That's the first and most essential question. Otherwise, you're in, you know, COG land. Yes.
Okay.
Last question.
Okay. And I'm going to make it a bundle. Okay. So Morpheus Codex says, DJ, was Jade Helm a precursor to military intel PSYOP QAnon? Fort Bragg turned power off without warning 5 years ago. I think it all comes together as a cyber false flag during the 2024 election. Hippocratic Oath says, if we have COG, can we stop worrying about elections? Simone Nyman, has COG been in place since 2020 and now it's ramping up towards 2030 to bring in the UN agenda? And Peter Nuss says, what about the CrowdStrike system that went down, shut down some banks, internet, and aircraft? Where does this fit in with the election?
The timing is extraordinary. So look at what took place in a short period of time. Remember the lead up. Assange got released. That was one. I would also throw in there that Bannon went to jail. I find that interesting because under these circumstances, you know, he's somebody with a very, he's kind of an Alex Jones in that sense. Big blowhorn and heavy, heavy focus on the situation. Then you had the strangely timed debate and the debacle of, you know, this kind of senile performance by Stepford Biden. Then the Democrats who wanted him out, it was the big story. They're pushing him out. He wants to stay. It's a deep state battle. The resolution that somebody came up with was, if we can't get Trump in prison, let's kill him. This is what the program was on the deep state side. They weren't able to pull it off. Somehow it wasn't pulled off, which is extraordinary. Then supposedly Biden gets COVID, goes off the campaign trail, and then resigns via text on Twitter. Just from running for the presidency. He keeps the presidency. He just won't be the candidate in the race. So he's stepping down from seeking the presidency. And then you have all this weirdness with him not being in public. So we're in, this is the vortex, the strange vortex that we're right in the middle of. And I think what we can do is really take it to heart that we're in the middle of a situation that's uncharted territory and that it's important to keep our heads about it, but to ask the right questions. In order to ask the right questions, you have to know what agency is it that assumes control over the United States in the case of an emergency. We don't know any of those personnel except for General Guillo. Who knows anything about them? And who knew about Guillo before I brought him up? Practically nobody. So there's a huge history of research around COG, but it's very limited to just a few brave people who thought, here's an unusual organization with no oversight that seems to be involved in every major deep event in American history. So, you know, we have a focus there, and I don't think it's any accident that the Secret Service director mentioned continuity of government this afternoon. It was a strange moment, shall we say. So those are all great questions. I guess the only thing I would say in looking at the whole thing is that not all the answers have come clear. What I can tell you is that the, you know, looking at the information that's available, it's clear that there were a team that were positioning a person that they would later identify as Crooks. I don't know if it was Crooks or not. It's quite possible that these were doubles, that they had people that look like Crooks actually up there on the roof shooting, and that Crooks is kind of the fall personality, the fall guy for those. But there's no question that as that investigation leans out, if you listen to the audio acoustics around the shooting, witness testimony, and all the rest of it, there's more than one guy shooting, that's for sure. So, and also moving a team like that into place, the fact that he has two vehicles, the van and the car, and now the bike, you know, how many how many arms and legs does this guy have? And the fact that he, you know, even after being engaged by law enforcement, wasn't taken out or the event wasn't stopped, shows that it was a deep event. There's no question in my mind. So therefore, we're already in very dangerous territory. And I think that they know that a Trump victory is coming and that they will do anything to prevent that outcome. And, you know, whether or not you favor Trump on a political basis, the idea of some phantom organization controlling the outcome of a government election is completely unacceptable and unconstitutional. So this is the nature of the position we find ourselves in. I'm sure we're going to learn more as time goes on here. So, you know, let's let's try to keep as positive as we can going in. And with that, Miss Olivia?
I am going to end on this quote.
Yes.
Warren Browning. We are living in treacherous times. We are watching world-changing history unfold in front of our own eyes. What happens over the next few months will be told and talked about for hundreds of years. Take note and write down these events as they unfold for future posterity.
Oh, absolutely. Let's not forget Gorbachev going to the Texas School Book Depository to make a speech and meeting up later with Kennedy's wife and John Jr. I mean, these people, you know, they live on a different ladder of understanding and the nature of reality and the forces that we're contending with. And, you know, you couldn't, as a politician, find a more conspicuous spot to go to make a speech and show up at and even cause a commotion at than the Texas School Book Depository where President Kennedy was assassinated from. We'll have a great show coming up for you on Friday, and we'll keep our eyes open on all these developments as we're going along. Of course, there's more on Crooks to come out, more on the Secret Service aspect of this incident, and more on the plans of how they're going to, you know, if Biden's going to reemerge here at some point, and some of the kind of deeper intrigue going on the political side. We'll put together a special report for you just on that. And I'll do a couple of shout outs here at the end. Let's do your super chats first.
Okay, let me get to the beginning.
Go for it.
Eurythmia is fun. Alarmin Bay. One day I'm going to say that right. Jimmy Lyle Kennemer, Amarillo Gunrunners, Tracy Klatke, B, the Bikini Truther, Wolfgang McCarthy, Debbie McAdoo, Robert Scott, Colonel Forbin, Just a Girl, Ayorke 01, Ronk Vogel, Brian Whitaker, High Speed Chase, Erica Swenson Elliott, Bill Monahan, Kathy Grant, Bobo the Clown, Jesse Lubke, Nancy Mercier, Freedom, Short Order Cook 1, Jordan Banner, Le Chat, CC, Robin Wills, Tommy Van Gompo, CC Jarvis, Joseph Fabry, Johnny Ricardo Bown, Knitting Kitten, and I think that's what we got tonight.
Wow, incredible. We really appreciate your support, and to all our subscribers, we couldn't do it without you. So we more than appreciate it, and we'll continue to deliver the deepest, most honest reports that we can get and get you the kind of information that is valuable and enlightening at the same time. And but it is great to have so many of you out there in the ideas. I'm going to shout out to a couple of you here. Song of Prayer says, excellent show, DJ and Olivia Wingsgirl. Yes, bravo, Miss Olivia. Nicely done. And great ideas from questions out there as well. Short Order Cook, let's see. Biden will be taken from the picture soon. He'll never have to answer for everything. Good point. There's a whole intrigue there, which is part of the roughing up of the Bidens and, you know, making them change their plans, as it were, probably included. Hey, you're liable for a lot of crimes. Let the truth be told through the heavens fall. That's Jim Garrison. Great quote there, Jimmy Lyle. Kennemer? And Dash Render, Jordan Banner, Wolfgang McCarthy. Wow, fantastic. BlackRock runs the world. Well, they're very nearly there for sure. Someone said Led Zepp. Oh, Lizeth. Well, that's communication breakdown. That's the Led Zeppelin song I was thinking of. Fulcanelli, Brad Briggs, David Divinity, Gypsy Moon, Caritas Tarot. Thank you. Great extra show, she says. I know Kate's out there. It was great to see Bosley out there. And of course, Dr. Farrell will have on for you later this week. And Nina says, Trident Fives. Yeah, what do you got?
I was just thinking about the whole show. I've been thinking about the end of the Maltese Falcon and how it's they
the
have to
stuff that
they,
dreams are made of.
Oh no, before that.
Oh yeah.
When they have to
figure out
blame.
Who the fall guys
yes,
are.
Exactly. And that's the conversation that's happening behind the scenes now is the cover story.
Who's going to be the fall guy?
How many people do they need to make the fall guy? It's you know, going to be more than one. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Najat's out there. Hunter will run with Harris. I love
love to see that. Boy, that would
I'd
be great
to see that.
Many thanks, DJ and Olivia. Don't worry, we'll dig in more with Harris. I'm still curious if they're going to keep her as the nominee by the convention. And we know that apparently our friends, the Obamas, aren't in favor of this, which I find interesting. The journey home says, bless you both. And predict the next big event, Dow Jones Mueller. Well, I think we've laid some things out there in the past couple of hours. You can sift through that. Good job, DJ. Thanks again, Bo Rip. Wow, fantastic. Brad Briggs. Now, that's a damn fine show. Nicely done. We will see you all on Friday, and we have some great surprises coming up for you this week and next week, and we'll be keeping a very close eye on the situation as soon as Stepford Biden reemerges in the picture. And I certainly hope for the country that this whole election thing is we're able to run an actual election and not have the COG mind dwellers kind of come in here and exploit an emergency situation. So hoping for the best and preparing for the worst. I think that's a classic for America. There's no place like home, says Rose Thistle Artworks, and ain't that the truth? We will see you all next week. And remember, it says end broadcast, but actually
never really ends.
It never really ends. And never let it be forgot. Once there was a Camelot and there can be again. Just think about it. And certainly, the fact that we had things like going on in this election, like Trump and, Kennedy and things like that, obviously it's in the air one way or another. And hopefully we'll get there. So we'll see you all later this week and have a great night.
God bless.